Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on taxes when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of our population with a top tax rate of only 7%. Now, today, of course, the fears of those early opponents of this tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%. And by the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family only had to work until January 30th to earn enough to satisfy the tax man at all levels. This year, the average American family will work all the way through May 12th. That's right, May 12th, in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. Now, what do you think that makes us? This income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments, and they violate eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. The income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank. Now, that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask this question: do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school, and be sure to order our free General Law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, informative. Best of all, it's free. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, tax and status. The school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time I said that corporations don't pay any tax. They don't pay property tax. Corporations don't pay income tax. They don't pay Social Security tax. They don't pay capital gains tax. Corporations pay zero tax. I know that's an outlandish statement to make, but bear with me. I can prove that, and I'm going to right now. I'm an old-timey corporate executive, a CEO, small corporation, you know, nothing like General Motors or Microsoft, but, you know, I'm kind of familiar with the ins and outs of the corporate business world. It's not a bad place to be. A lot of money is made in corporate business. And corporate business is regulated and controlled to the nth degree. And it comes under a doctrine of law called Hale versus Hinkle. Hale, H-A-L-E versus Hinkle, H-E-N-K-E-L, I believe it is. Cited at 201 U.S. 43. And go to page 75, and it'll tell you the difference between an individual and a corporation. And as we progress along through this series, I'm going to cover that with you. And I'll show you that corporations are really controlled. A lot of money to be made, no doubt about that. A lot of money. And it's the preferred methodology for implementing limited liability. If you want to do business so that you have no liability yourself, no matter what you do to somebody, If you harm somebody, indeed, if you kill them, nobody can lay a hand on you. Corporations are the way to go. That's what they're designed for, limited liability. If you want to skim off the top, corporations are just the ticket. You want to steal, the corporations are just made for that. They were thought up by thieves and politicians. Politicians and businessmen, you know, they came up with this neat organization called corporation. It's a neat way to do business, a neat way to make money. I used to do that, and then one day I woke up and I said, you know, I don't like all this regulation and control, and I think I'm gonna quit this. I'm gonna go back to doing something a little different, and it's called private business, and I'll tell you a little more about that as we progress along. But let's take a look at a corporation which pays zero tax, not a penny. General Motors, in all of the years of their existence, has never paid one penny in income tax. Shocking? Yeah, I'd say so. But then that's the design mechanism. Now, you read in the paper all the time about General Motors paying taxes and about the tax rates, you know, in corporate America and corporate tax rates and taxing corporations this and taxing corporations that, and that's true. General Motors writes a lot of checks, and then those checks go right into the coffers of the United States Treasury, but not out of their money. Not out of their money. It comes out of your money. So let me take you back in time to an old-timey corporation called Idaho Power. This is the one I researched out to find out whether or not these corporations pay any taxes. And so the Idaho Power Corporation was incorporated in 1911 up in Boise, Idaho. It's the biggest corporation in the state. It's the biggest employer. It's the biggest business in the state of Idaho. Well, at least it was back in the 80s. Unless something came in there and displaced them, they're probably still the biggest. And about every 10 years, they'd have a big brouhaha over raising taxes on Idaho Power. And the watchword was, Idaho Power has to pay its fair share. Idaho Power has to pay their fair share. That's the song and dance that they gave us. And I think that makes a lot of sense. It sounds good. You know, it's kind of like a slogan that says, I like Ike, I like Ike. It doesn't make any sense, it doesn't tell you anything, but I like Ike. It's a political slogan. Idaho Power has to pay their fair share. And we all want other people to pay their fair share. I mean, it makes you mad as hell, you know. If I don't pay the income tax and you do, you don't like that. Everybody has to pay this income tax. Everybody has to pay these taxes. So last time I took you through these 14 taxes. Remember the 14 taxes that you have to pay? Well, Idaho Power Company, they don't pay these 14 taxes. You do, they don't. Well, in 1972, when I moved up there to Idaho from California, they're having this big controversy over raising Idaho Power Company's taxes. And politicians can be elected or defeated for office depending upon the stand that they take on taxing Idaho Power, you know, the state's biggest employer and biggest business. And they get real excited, and Idaho Power Company gets real excited too. So Idaho Power would take out 2-page ads in the Idaho Statesman. And I was new to the state, and so I saw this 2-page spread in the Idaho Statesman's Sunday paper. Cost $8,000 a page. 2 pages, right in the middle of the paper, $16,000. And Idaho Power, they said, well, we're a good neighbor. And they took an example of Shoshone County, and they said, we pay 60% of the taxes in Shoshone County. I think Shoshone County had about 6,000 population. So I could understand how Idaho Power Company could say, we pay 60% of the taxes in that one county. Well, even if that's true, Idaho Power Company never paid a nickel's worth of tax in Shoshone County, but they said they did, and they said they paid 60% of the tax. And I thought, well, that's pretty reasonable. I think they should pay the lion's share of the taxes. After all, they're the biggest outfit in the state. And they would take the side that, no, you shouldn't raise the taxes on Idaho Power for 55 different reasons. but they never said because of rate increases. They always said there's 55 different reasons, but they never told us the truth about why we shouldn't raise their taxes, which I'm coming to. Just be patient with me. I'm old, fat, and bald, but just bear with me. And so the legislature, they're arguing up one side and down the other, and there's this big controversy going on, and people are writing letters to the editor, and people are calling in on the talk radio shows and you know, weighing in on their 2 cents worth. And God, people are just really excited about this. Well, finally, at the end of the program here, a couple, 3 months into the program, they went ahead and passed the legislation and raised their taxes. So Idaho Power opens up the paper again, and here's this two-page spread, and it says, well, the people have spoken through their representatives, and the tax legislation has gone through, and God bless democracy, and God bless America, and God bless all you good people out there, and God bless the governor, and God bless, you know, they just couldn't have been nicer about it, you know? It's like getting trashed, and you get up off the floor, and you say, well, I fought a good fight, but you just beat the hell out of me, and so let's get on with life. About 3 weeks later, I was thumbing through the paper, and on page 27, that's the legal notices section on the Idaho Statesman, page 27, buried way, way back in the newspaper. Normal people don't read the legal notices, but I do. And in the lower right-hand corner, way down toward the bottom, in the outside column, there was a little piece about 1 inch high that caught my eye. I don't know why it just caught my eye. You know, you got probate over here in the estate of so-and-so, and then you got this quitclaim deed, and you know, there's all this real estate going through here, and then there's this little piece down there bottom that says, Idaho Power Company petitioned the Idaho Public Utility Commission for a rate increase. And I don't remember the exact number, but it was 3.615577965.32% rate increase. Boy, that caught my eye, I'm telling you. Now, you know, the average guy on the street probably look at that and just yawn, but boy, when I saw that, boy, I just sat bolt upright and I said, oh my God, what's this? You see, as a businessman, if I was going to raise my prices, I wouldn't raise my prices 3.674621972.4%. I'd raise it 3%, 4%, 5%, but I wouldn't raise it in decimals. What are these decimals? And it isn't that's what it was raised. It was that's what they petitioned for. And I said to myself, why would the power company go to the Public Utility Commission asking for a rate increase, asking for it in 3%, which makes sense, but then in decimals, the balance of it in decimals? So I said, well, I'm going to find out about this. So I went down to I think his name was Pete Cinerusa, the Secretary of State of Idaho back in those days. And I went down and I said, I'd like to get the charter of the Idaho Power Company. And you got to pay them a little fee, and they go photocopy that for you, and they bring it out. And I think for $5, I got the Idaho Power Company charter. And I went back to my office, and I sat down, read the charter, and it became crystal clear. You know, then I could understand why it was that they wanted a rate increase of 3.6%. You know, 497721. Now, actually, I'm exaggerating there. It was four decimal places. It was 3% plus four decimal places. But you know, when you're asking for a rate increase in decimals, and you're talking about big bucks, you're talking about getting this right down to the gnat's whisker. So I followed it through, and here's what the story is. Idaho Power Company, incorporated in 1911, is limited by law to an 8% profit on their invested capital. Invested capital. That means that if you take a look at the number of dollars worth of power poles and wire and generating stations and substations and trucks and pickups and cars and offices, you take all of the assets that they have, all of their investment, and you add all of that up. And let's say it totaled $1 million. It probably totals $10 billion, but, you know, it's just $1 million. That means that the profit that they're limited to per year is $80,000 per million by law. It's a public utility. It's a monopoly. See, they're the only kids that can deliver electricity to you. There's no competition. So the state comes in and says, since there's no competition, then we'll just determine what the profit margin should be, and the profit margin is 8%. Now, this explains a lot. It tells you why the power company has brand new pickups and brand new trucks and brand new buildings and brand new offices. Every time you go in there, everything they've got is new, updated every year. Now, of course, us old farmers out here, you know, we buy a pickup and we got to make that thing last for 10 years. Well, at least I do. I'm one of them poor farmers, you know, and I just got to make do with what I got. And it also answers another question. Here's why the power company buys new trucks every year, new pickups every year, new everything every year. You heard about the Defense Department years ago, you know, they'd have these cost-plus overruns, and come to find out they were paying $600 for a hammer and $30 for screws and $40 for nuts and bolts and stuff like that. And, you know, and then people would say, now look at this, we're the taxpayers and we have to pay for that. See, you people just don't understand business. First of all, you don't understand government, but secondly, you don't understand business. All right, now let me give you a little clue. I said Idaho Power never paid a dime's worth of tax in their entire history, and they never have, don't now, and never will. And that's because corporations aren't designed to pay tax. Corporations are designed to collect tax and pay it over to the government. They collect it from you and pay it over to the government. But the 8% profit that Idaho Power Company makes, they don't care how much the tax is. They don't care what the rates are. It's irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant. It doesn't make any difference if Idaho, the state of Idaho, taxed, doubled. Idaho Power's taxes in the morning. Idaho Power Company would come out and ask for a rate increase, and they'd get the rate increase because they're entitled to it as a matter of law. Now, Idaho Power Company cannot make a nickel more than their 8%, and they can't make a nickel less than the 8%. And that's why you get those decimals out there. They can't raise it 4%. That would pay them too much money. And if they make more than the 8%, then they've got to give you a rebate. They've got to lower their rates, or they've got to send you a refund check. They want to do that. So they want to get it down to as close to the 8% as they possibly can. And they do. And they do. Now that tells you why it is that the power company buys all new stuff. Now let me give you an illustration. Let's suppose that I'm George Gordon with the Ajax Power Pole Company. And you're the purchasing agent for Idaho Power Company. And I come into your office and I say, Bob, I'd like to sell you power poles, and I'm very competitive. Very competitive. I've got the best power pole in the marketplace. And I've got the best price. $150 a pole, and they're totally creosoted, guaranteed for 30 years, unconditionally. And you say, wow, that's a hell of a good power pole. So you take my card and you say, thank you very much, Mr. Gordon. And pretty soon the Acme power pole representative comes into your office and he says, now I got power poles for $300 a power pole, fully creosoted, guaranteed for 30 years. And we got the best pole in the market. And you say, well gosh, George Gordon was just in here a little while ago and he's got power poles for $150 and you got power poles for $300. And he says to you, well, we'll raise the price to $450 if you'd prefer. So, you know, you go back and you get to mulling this over a little bit, and I'm going to give you about 5 seconds here. Now, who are you going to buy these power poles from, partner? You're going to buy them from the George Gordon Ajax Power Pole Company, or are you going to buy them from the Acme Power Pole Company that charges twice as much? Now, if you answered, we're going to buy our power poles from George Gordon, you're fired. You lose your job. You're out of here. And if you said, we're going to buy our power poles from the $300 power pole Acme company, because that makes all the business sense in the world. Well, here's why. Let's suppose you're going to buy 1,000 power poles for $300 each. That's $300,000. Okay. Now plug $300,000 into your Texas Instruments Sharp EL1197G2 computer, and then multiply that times 0.08, and that gives you $24,000 profit for the year. You invest your money. You invest your cash flow. You invest the dollars that are coming in the door into power poles. See, you don't get paid on your cash flow. You get paid on your invested capital. And then you just now have invested another $24,000 into power poles, and now you're going to get 8% return on those power poles. Now, if you were to buy George Gordon power poles for $150, you'd only have $150,000 of invested capital, which would give you a $12,000 a year return. So what do you want, $12,000 a year return or $24,000? See why we buy new trucks? See why we buy the expensive power poles? You see why we have $600 hammers and $30 screws? Because it's the business model set up by the legislature. It's designed that way. So if you thought that you wanted economy and government and that you wanted to save money and buy the $150 poles, and hey, listen, you're out of touch with reality, partner. All right, so now that you understand how that game is played and why it works that way, going back here to the hidden taxes that we pay, that's one of those hidden taxes. See, you didn't know that you were paying that $300,000 to buy those power poles so that you could pay higher rates so that the power company could make more money. They want to get as much money invested out there as they can. All right, now, I said they don't pay any tax. That's exactly right. See, if the legislature came to you and said, you know, you're a citizen of Idaho, and they said, well, we're going to raise your taxes by $5 a year. You'd know that. And you'd have to write a check for $5 every year called tax increase, utility tax increase. That might even make you mad, make you vote Republican or something, saying that you don't want to do that. And they don't want you to do that either. So what they do is they go to the power company and they say, we're going to raise the power company's taxes. The power company doesn't pay tax. The power company goes to the Public Utility Commission and says, hey, listen, they've raised our cost of doing business, and we're entitled to 8% of our invested capital. Therefore, we've got to have a rate increase of this amount. So they compute it out, and they say, okay, we're going to raise the rates $5 on every meter in the state. So now, at the end of the month, instead of paying $45 a month on your power bill, it goes up to $50. You're happy. You chalk it up to inflation. You chalk it up to, well, you know, costs go up. Power company says, nope, no skin off our back. We just pass it right on through to the ratepayer. See how that game is played? Now, it's a killer when you're like General Motors and you've got this pension program. And it costs you $1,600 for every car that you sell. You got to put $1,600 into your past employees' pension fund, or your Delta Airlines, or your United Airlines. And the other airlines, you know, that you're competing against, like Swiss Air, or like Toyota, or some other foreign-made automobile, they don't pay those kinds of pensions. They don't have that kind of overhead. That's a killer. That's where you lose market share. That's where these foreign competitors drive you out of business. But then that's what free trade's all about. And we Americans just love free trade, don't we? God, it's wonderful. Well, it's wonderful for General Motors, and it's wonderful for Microsoft, and I'm sure that it's real good, you know, for the companies that offshore and put their companies overseas, but I'm not sure that it's good for American workers or American consumers for that matter, although you get this cheap stuff coming from China and that makes you feel real good today. But remember, the cheap stuff that comes from China has to be manufactured by slave labor in order to make it cheap, and so they have to outsource your job to China, and so now you're unemployed, but the stuff is real cheap. You don't have a job to earn the money to buy it, but it's real cheap. Now, of course, if you happen to be one of the guys that still has a job, well, then that's real good for you. That's wonderful for you. The guy that loses his job, though, and it's outsourced to China or India or Pakistan or someplace, that's not so good for him. So if you take a look at our textile industry here in America, it's gone. And you take a look at the shoe industry, it's gone. Only 1% of shoes are still manufactured in the United States. 99% come from overseas. All right, so all the people that were employed in the shoe business in this country are now out of that business. And that business is now over in China or Pakistan or Philippines or someplace else. All right, now I'm going to tell you another little story over here as it relates to the corporation. I used to operate a little corporation, a little company, a furniture company called Atlantis Manufacturing Company, Inc. in Boise, Idaho, 412 South 9th Street. For you people in Boise, you can go down there and take a look at the big yellow building, and that's where in 1975 through 76 through about 1981, we manufactured Atlantis water beds. And a retail store there, and wholesale manufacturing, and a wholesale operation, and warehouse. And I had 30 employees, and we produced about $1 million a year worth of product back in those days. Paid about $200,000 a year in taxes. Corporation now paying $200,000 a year in taxes to 28 agencies of government from Boise to Washington, D.C. Now, remember, I said that the Atlantis Company never paid a nickel's worth of tax. I know. I was the CEO. I can guarantee you, I never paid a nickel's worth of tax. Never. Now, I wrote a lot of checks to a lot of taxing agencies, but I never paid any tax. I just took that money from you and passed it on. And the way that works is this. Let's suppose that you're a mechanic and you're a Mr. Goodrich and you're working in my shop and I charge $25 an hour for shop time and I pay you $10 an hour. Okay? Customer comes in, he needs his car tuned up and it takes you 4 hours to do it, so we charge the customer $100 plus parts. And $40 goes to me. $20 goes to taxes and overhead, and of the other $40 that you thought you earned because it was, you know, $10, $20, $30, $40, $10 an hour for 4 hours, you don't even get the $40. I get $40, you don't. You get about $30. See, we take about 25% of that out for your income tax, Social Security tax, and other miscellaneous taxes. And if you think that the corporation is paying half of your Social Security tax, I want to remind you, John, that you're doing 100% of the work. I'm collecting 100% of the money. And I'm keeping my 40%, and you're not getting your 40%. The government gets about 25% out of your $40, plus the government gets the other $5, which is what I've already billed into the price. So the workman and the customer pays 100% of the tax, and the corporation pays zero tax. Got that? Now I want to show you another little trick here. The best thing that can happen to a corporation is that the government comes in and raises taxes. God, I love it. In the years that I was in the Atlantis Company, the state came in and raised our taxes 3 times. It was the greatest thing that ever happened. When they raise our taxes, I raise my prices. Now, if you got a pen and paper, write this down. I'll show you how it works. Very simple. I produce $1 million a year, and I make 10% profit, so I get to keep $100,000, and the government comes in, and they tax me 28%. So They take $28,000 out of my $100,000 net and leave me with $72,000. You follow that? Simple enough. Government comes in, raises taxes 10%. Now they come in and take $38,000. Know what I did? I raised my prices by 10%. Can you follow that? Now, most of you people probably went to public school and you're not picking up on this, but when the government taxes you, they tax you on the net, and when I raise my prices, I raise my price on the gross. So I raise my prices 10% of $1 million, and so now I charge you $1,100,000. The government comes in, charges me tax on $1,100,000, 38% tax on $1,100,000. 1100000. Let me do this again. 10. That's 110. I'm not getting over here. That's 11,000, 110,000, 1,100,000 times 0.38%. So now I got to pay an extra $4,180, or I'm going to pay $41,800. But hey, I raised my prices. I raised my prices by $100,000. If I was just going to pass through the tax to you, then I would raise my prices on my gross sales by 0.00418. I don't. I raise my prices 1.00. I raise my prices 10%, boys and girls. 10. And so I make that extra profit. And you know, I was in the business world for about 40 years, and I never ran across a single customer. Now, a lot of businessmen, you know, we sit over here and kind of snicker while we're having lunch, you know, two martinis down at the Outlaw for lunch. We're kind of snickering up our sleeves. I never had a customer ever walk in and say, "Wait a minute, Gordon, you're a thief." Not one. I used to sell furniture on contract. It, right in the heart. Remember about 1978, 79, 80, when interest rates just went through the roof at 21%? Remember that? I was selling water beds as fast as I could ship them out the door at 12% add-on. I never had a single customer ever ask me, could you explain add-on interest for me? It was the methodology by which we calculated the interest. That's where you pay all the interest before you pay any principal. And 12% add-on is just that. We're adding it on. It's not 12% simple interest. The actual effective interest rate was 34%. And the maximum legal rate was 36%. And I did it through the Associates and Beneficial Finance. 100% legal, passed, licensed, bonded, and insured by the Idaho State Legislature. And you people are only concerned about how many dollars a month does that cost, not how many percent interest am I paying. Now, maybe you're a little different, but I never ran across anybody yet that could do the arithmetic. Now, hang on. I got to give you a reminder here, and we'll come back, and let's start learning how to do some arithmetic on Social Security. You know, Social Security is the third rail of politics. Social Security is such a bad investment program that if it was offered by any private insurance company, the government would close them down because it's illegal to pay you back anything less than what you pay in. Only Social Security can take in a dollar and pay you back less than you paid in. No annuity, no insurance company, no bank, no institution can take in a dollar and pay you back less than a dollar. Only government can steal from you like that. It's against the law. Hey, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, yesterday when I opened the program, I gave you a citation, Why Do We Have Taxation? That was an article that I took off of Kitco, written by Steve Seville. If you'd like a copy of it, just go to www.kitco.com/IND/Seville. S-A-V-I-L-L-E. Pretty good article on why do we have taxation. I forgot to give him credit yesterday, so better late than never. Now, I said that Social Security is the third rail of politics. Everybody is excited about Social Security. At my last class reunion, everybody was talking about retirement and Social Security and how much money they were going to have and how much vacation time and all the things that they were going to do. And I'm 67 now. It was 4 or 5 years ago that I'm 67 and I'm not on Social Security. Remember, I could have signed up at age 62 and they would have paid me $805 a month. And I called them up. I wanted to know. I got the arithmetic out and kind of curious about that. $805 a month. I could be retired, boys and girls, on 805. Let me get my Texas Instrument Sharp EL1197G2 out here, or G3. It's 805 times 12. I'd be getting $9,660 a year, about 10 grand a year in round numbers, $10,000 a year, and I passed it up. Can you believe it? Who in his right mind would be that dumb? I mean, you got to be downright stupid to give up your $10,000 a year rocking chair, right? Yeah, but I did. It just goes to show you how dumb I am. Now, I got to looking at this Social Security thing here quite a few years ago. In fact, I started back in 1968. And I wanted to know if I was to invest at that time, 1968, $1,000 a year, which was the maximum Social Security payment, you know, back in the 60s, $1,000 a year. If I was to pay that into a bank account at 5% simple interest for 45 years, how much money would I have? And the answer was about $400,000. And $400,000, just do this right here for you, times 0.05% would pay you $20,000 a year in interest and never depreciate your principal. And I thought, wow, that's pretty good. Now, back in the 60s, I was going to get $500 a month or $400. I've forgotten now. $400 or $500 a month. You know, for the rest of your life, which is about 10 years from the time you retire. You know, you retire at age 65. Well, lifespan on average is 75, and so you're going to die in 10 years. So you're going to collect this $9,600 a year. So let's just do that. $9,600 a year times 10 years. Well, that's $96,000. Well, let me tell you what I did. Back in 78, when I finally learned how to rescind my Social Security account and opt out of the system, which they surely tell you that you can't do that. I don't know if they're going to do to you if you opt out of the system, but they tell you you can't do that. That's what they told me. So you can't do that. So I said, well, what are you going to do to me? Nobody could tell me, so I just did it anyway. So I opted out of the system back in 78. Now, up through 1978, I had paid in approximately $12,000 and some change. See, when I first started paying Social Security taxes, it was $82 or $84 a year back in 1950. I mean, it was just chicken feed. You know, $80 back in those days was quite a bit of money, but, you know, today, what's $80? And then they kept raising the rates. Yeah, they kept raising the numbers all the time. And that tells you something about this Ponzi scheme called Social Security. When you have to keep raising the rates, it tells you that it's a Ponzi scheme, that it's not self-sustaining. So, I said to myself, well, gee, I'd like to get out of this thing, but I don't know quite how to do it, and I needed to find out what the numbers were. I could see that I'd get a lot more money if I saved my own annuity, but, you know, the law says that when you're working for wages, you got to pay the Social Security. And one day I woke up and I said, you know, I think I'll just quit working. There's no money in it. There's no profit. I mean, I know I used to work for wages. I drove truck and I run a company and I did all. I used to be a plumber, carpenter, electrician, a general contractor. I mean, I've done a lot of work and worked for a lot of men. And I found out that there's no money in labor. So I said, well, that tells you something about that. The money is in sales. So write that down. The money is in sales. You want to get into sales. You want to be selling something in a real small box worth a lot of money. I was in a guy's office one time, and he said, Gordon, I think you're in the wrong business. And I said, what do you say to that, Colin? He said, well, he said, when you come down here with a truck and trailer load of furniture, it's worth about $25,000. $25,000. I said, yeah, that's about right. And then he said, and that's good. You know, it cost you $12,000 to make it, and you sell it for $25,000, and you're pretty happy, and I'm pretty happy, but it's not good for you. He said, now you see that van out there? And he pointed at his parking lot. He said, he's got a van out there. He says, I got $50,000 worth of stereo equipment in that van, and it's not full. $50,000 in a crummy van. And he said, do you see these big grain trucks running up and down the highway? He said, well, they're loaded with about 20 tons of grain. And the 20 tons of grain in there is worth $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. And you got to have an $80,000 truck to carry $4,000 worth of stuff. He said, now I've got a $10,000 van out there, and I got $50,000 worth of stereo equipment in it. And he said, now you got an $80,000 truck sitting out there, and you haul about $25,000 worth of stuff on it. And he said, the trick in life is to sell something that's worth a lot of money in a very small box. Always remembered that. I said, well, yeah, well, I'd like to do that. Well, Social Security, you know, the people that thunk up this program called Social Security, they got a hell of a scam going there. I mean, this is a wonderful program. I don't begrudge them a bit. It's a great program. But it's not good for me, and so I decided to get out of it. Now, the reason I thought it would be a good idea to get out of it, listen to some of these numbers. If you earn the minimum wage, currently $5.15 an hour, and you work 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year for 45 years, with the current Social Security tax rate of 16.1%, you're going to pay about $1,770 a year in payroll and withholding taxes. Okay, got that number? $1,770 a year times 45 years. Now, if you took that same amount of money, $1,770 a year, and you invested that in U.S. savings bonds, which have an interest rate of about 5%, compounded annually on the average, starting in the year 2000 and continuing through 2045, you'd have a principal balance of $282,726.71. Just round that off to about $275,000. A little over $250,000, which would yield you $14,000 a year or $1,200 a month forever. $1,200 a month forever. And when you died, you'd still have the same $282,726.71 to pass on to your children as an inheritance. I want you to note that for purposes of simplicity, I'm leaving out inflation as a factor since the COLA, that's the Cost of Living Adjustment Index, are designed to keep inflation's effects to a minimum. Now, they lie to you, and they don't keep inflation to a minimum, but, you know, they say they do. So if inflation is 3%, your check goes up 3%. And since the rate on bonds or bank accounts is generally higher than inflation, those totals would also go up. So by leaving inflation out of this picture, we get an equally clear picture of the relative financial values without the need to do a lot of unnecessary math. So you're at minimum wage, $5.15 an hour, and you're paying in $1,770 a year for 45 years. That's about $275,000, and it'll pay you about $1,200 a month forever, and you'll have the same $282,000 to give to your children. Now, here's what Social Security is going to do for you. Social Security is going to take your $1,770 a year for 45 years, which totals $80,000. Then, when you stop paying in and you start drawing out at age 65, you're entitled to $500 a month. On average, you're going to die at age 75. So you're going to be drawing $60,000, and Social Security is going to charge you $20,000 to write you 120 checks. So let me just put $20,000 in here. Divide that by 120. So they're going to charge you $166 to send you your $500 check every month. Now, you know, if you're working for minimum wage for 45 years, you're probably not too smart. You probably don't have an MBA from Harvard, and you probably are one of the poor people that Jesus talked about, the poor you have with you always, and probably you are pretty dumb, and you don't know how to count, don't know how to save, don't know how to administer your own money, and you probably need a bureaucrat in Washington to do that for you. I don't know. And after all, you know, I don't. I just figured out that I didn't need somebody to write me a check for $500 every month, that I could probably do that myself and save the $166 per check to do that. That's the best deal you can get on Social Security. They're going to charge you $20,000 to give you back 60, 25%. Okay. Now, if you're a middle-income worker, just a middle-income guy, blue-collar, making about $40,000 a year, I figured this out at $35,000. Say you're making $35,000 a year. Using the above formula, you're going to be paying in about $5,600 a year in payroll and withholding taxes. Now, remember, this is 16%. Is half from you and half from your employer. But you produce the whole 16%. And if he wasn't paying it into Social Security, he'd be paying it to you. This is a part of your benefits. It's like your health insurance, dental insurance, legal fund insurance, you know, unemployment insurance. These insurances, you work, you perform all of the labor that produces all of this, and we administer it for you because you're not very smart. Being a blue-collar worker, probably don't have a degree after your name, can't count very good. And so we do this for you. And that just goes to show you what nice guys us businessmen are. So you're paying in $5,600 a year. And you're going to do this now for 45 years. Now, if you invested that money in U.S. savings bonds at 5%, I mean something that's really safe, U.S. savings bonds, and this means that over a 45-year period, you'd end up with a principal balance of $894,000, which would yield $44,000 a year in interest. That's $3,700 a month. Forever. And you'd still have that same $894,000 to leave to your children. But Social Security, when you die, you don't have anything left over. If you die before you get to be 65, your spouse may get compensation, but hey, listen, they may not. And when you die, there's no estate. Whatever's left over is cheats to the state. Now, here's what Social Security is going to do for you. Social Security is going to take that same $5,600 a year from you over that same 45 years. That comes to $252,000. That's a quarter of a million. And when you retire at age 65, you're going to be eligible for payments of $804 a month. That was me, $804 a month. For a total of $96,480 if you live to be an average age of 75. Now, you've just paid in $252,000, and they're going to pay you $100,000. That means that the government is going to give you back 38 cents on the dollar. As I said before, the more you make, the worse Social Security looks. I should say this. They're not going to give you back 38 cents on the dollar, which is what the low-income guy got. They're going to give you back $1 for every $2.73 that you pay in. All right, so on example number one, minimum wage, write this down. Minimum wage. You pay in a dollar, you get 62 cents back, and they're going to charge you 38 cents. If you're a middle income worker, you're going to pay in $2.73 and get $1 back. All right, now, let's go a step further. Now, let's take a look at you professionals, all you real smart guys that do have degrees, who did go to college, and you are real smart, and you make a lot of money, and you make $38 an hour. That's $76,000 a year. That's $11,658 a year that you're paying into Social Security. Well, by the time you reach retirement age, you've paid in $524,000. Now, that's a half a million dollars. Can you follow that? Half a million. If you invested that half a million dollars, the same amount of money, in U.S. savings bonds at 5% interest over that same period, 45 years, that would give you a principal balance at the end of $1,861,000. That's $1.8 million, which would yield you $93,000 a year or $7,700 a month forever, and you'd still have money left over, $1.8 million, to give to your kids when you die. Now, Social Security is going to take that same half a million bucks. They're going to pay you about $1,200 a month for being such a generous donor to their program. This means that if you live to be an average age of 75, you'll have collected about $138,000. Now, let's remember that you just finished paying in over half a million. So if you thought the low-income worker who got back 66 cents on the dollar or the middle-income worker who got back 38 cents on the dollar were bad, then you'll only be getting back 26 cents on the dollar. So as I said at the beginning, the more you make, the worse Social Security looks. So if you pay in a dollar and you're at minimum wage, you get back 66 cents. If you're a mechanic or you're some guy, a blue-collar worker working in the trades, you get back 38 cents. And if you're a high-income worker and you got a lot of letters after your name, you're a doctor, lawyer, or a real estate broker, you pay in $5 and you get back $4. That's the bottom line. Now, excuse me, you pay in $5, they keep $4 and you get back $1. Had that backwards. Now remember, Social Security is called the third rail of politics. And George Bush, you know, wanted to tamper with Social Security. He said, we know Social Security is a Ponzi scheme and we got to change this thing. The people of America and the Congress said, no way, Jose, are we going to change Social Security. And listen, children, I don't want to rag you and tell you that you ought to get out of Social Security. Hell, I don't know what's good for you. I just know that in 1978, I dropped out of Social Security, and I was paying in the maximum right then. And I'd paid in about $12,000, maybe a little more. Seems to me I was $12,000 and change. So if I'd have continued paying in 1979, 80, 85, 90, 95, 2000, so on, I figured I would have paid in $143,000. Now, $143 plus $12 is $155,000. about $150,000 I was going to pay in. But I didn't pay in that $150,000. And today I'm not drawing anything out. Well, it's fair. I didn't pay in. I don't draw out. Now, I'm not going to tell you what I did with my $150,000, but I did something with it. Hell, if I burned it all up on airplane gas, at least I had some fun. And I don't want to give you $5 and then you give me back one. I just didn't burn up the whole $5 in airplane gas. Now, that's just my druthers. And so I invested my money in something else, and I am today ecstatic. I am just happy as a clam at high tide, drawing nothing from Social Security. But people say, well, how do you live? And the answer is, I live very well. Thank you. Very well. Now, I teach a business class, and I teach other people how to live very well without Social Security and without income tax. I had some guy tell me, he said, do you know how many schools you got up there on the north slope of Alaska? I said, no. He said, well, I don't know if anybody up there doesn't have one. Now, you boys working up there on the north slope of Alaska make a lot of money, make a lot of wages, and you spend a lot of money, and you have good times, smoke a lot of cigars, chase a lot of wild women, drink a lot of good whiskey. And I don't begrudge that a bit. You know, that's hard, tough life up there. But you know, when you're young, you can do that. When you get to be old, you got to look to taking care of yourself. So it would be worthwhile for you to start thinking about, well, how am I going to take care of myself when I get to be 55, 60, 65, 70, 75 years old? Who's going to feed me? And if you think Social Security is going to feed you today, if you're already retired on Social Security, you're okay. But if you think Social Security is always going to be there and is always going to be paying out dollars for you, you got another guess coming. That ain't going to happen. Now, all Ponzi schemes come to an end. It's just the law of life. All Ponzi schemes come to an end. And Social Security is projected to come to an end about the year 2032 when it's in the hawk, $3.8 trillion. That's the last projection I saw. And Medicare isn't going to last that long. And your balance of payments deficit isn't going to last anywhere near that long. And your national debt isn't going to last anywhere near that long. So you got these four wing-dingers over here. The national debt, balance of payments, Social Security, and Medicare. And they're not going to all cook at the same time. And when that thing comes to a head and the economy implodes like it did in Russia here a few years back, you're going to end up flat broke, starting over again. That's where we're headed. Flat broke and starting over. That's why I figured there wasn't any point in me retiring. I just have to get up one morning after the retirement check stopped and go back to work. So I figure I might just as well stay right here on the job and just keep right on working, because that's the ultimate end of where this thing is going. And all of you pension people out there know that by now, don't you? Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to cut it off right here. We'll pick this up again talking about taxes tomorrow night, same time, same station, here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that this is the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.